This is the beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 158D. Excuse me. Page 675. And we are looking at the collections on the various planets. The collection of references on Venus was long, and it took a long time to think through it. And there's still many problems remaining as to the true place of Venus as a chakra and as a home to a permanent atom and hence to a principle. And they can be different. Venus is home to one of the super principles, probably the monastic. But even if it were in the heart center of the solar logos, what principle would that be? And if it were, would it be Buddhi? Because Venus is not far enough advanced for that. Jupiter is, in terms of the status of the planetary logos, not in terms of unfoldment. Those are two different things. Would Venus represent in some way Kama, since it is possibly the, takes the place of the solar plexus center of the solar logos? Well, it seems that it represents something higher, and yet definitely has to do with the astral body of the solar logos. Just like Mars probably has a lot to do with the sacral center and the physical body of the solar logos, but also the sacral center has been said to be the home of the mental elemental. So when you try to compare these different placements of the planets in different contexts, the correspondences have to be worked out very carefully. And then you want to always bring it right down to your own system and see how you can use it. If we could get a very good idea of our own etheric system and the balance or imbalance which exists between the different parts of it, we might be able to transfer such knowledge into the heavens. Right now we're conducting all manner of energies, and we want to know what energies are flowing through our etheric body and through what chakras they are flowing, and what principles are activated through what kinds of permanent atoms. We all have a pretty good idea that we're trying not to be emotionally polarized. We are trying to be mentally polarized. And we want, as a frontier, to have Buddhi demonstrating monastically, you know, in our own life. In our own life, we want Buddhi monastically demonstrating. But later, we also want Atma Buddhically demonstrating. That would be love and will, wouldn't it? The will expressed through love. So we can come right down into our own energy system and see what's actually happening here. And then we can analogize and take the parallel to the heights. And we have to realize that planets can have more than one function, as I've been trying to emphasize. They do have more than one ray, and therefore they can be related to more than one chakra. Although probably depending upon their specific polarization of the time, they will be most related to a particular chakra. There's so much fifth ray in Venus that you could think of it as related to the Ajna center of our solar logos. But we can't lose track of Neptune, which gives the vision, and Saturn, which can be related to the base of the spine, and also to the alto major center, and also to the throat. So if Jupiter represents the heart, and Uranus in general represents the head center of our solar logos, and Vulcan has to do with the head center, but maybe the jewel in the head center. It has to do with the heart of the sun eventually, but maybe not yet. Neptune has a place in relation to the heart within the head as the transmitter of compassion. Pluto, I think, has a place at the base of the skull, because it's both mental and basic, although there's much to develop there, the alto major center of our solar logos. Saturn representing the throat, Vulcan representing more than one thing, the seven head centers, perhaps within the head, and we'd have to look above the head as well, but it's the same problem with the Great Bear. Is it within the head, above the head, or both? Making 14. Jupiter, the heart. Venus, the solar plexus, I believe. Mars, the sacral. Earth, the base of the spine. We're just dealing with chakras at the moment. Mercury, in this case, can be active at the base of the spine, but also at the Ajna Center, which is two-leaved. And we have the Tunis related to Mercury. I do think Venus is destined for the heart, and DK makes a direct connection with Venus and the heart center. It could easily have served an Ajna Center function, or might serve an Ajna Center function. Mercury is always the hard one. He's not found, I think, among the three persons of the Logoic Trinity who each include three planets for demonstrating. Mercury is relationship. He does rule for the initiate or for the disciple. The Ajna Center, I think, at a stage after Venus rules the Ajna Center. He can work at the base of the spine of our solar logos, involving Kundalini, which is active and intelligent, but so can Mars, and so can Pluto. And the Earth is the major correspondence there for the base of the spine center. So it's largely a question, I mean, this question of harmonizing the dualities at the Ajna Center and directing all energies, because Mercury, in a way, is the energy that is directed, and so it would make a good director of energy. It would rule an eye that could see where the energy had to go. Then, of course, there's the whole question of the third eye as a center, as an evocation from maybe the three synthesizing planets found here in the head, or maybe Uranus, Mercury, and Saturn, leaving Neptune to the heart and the head center. Well, you know, it's not so much that we have to know we've been successful in assigning these planets as the logoic centers, as we have to have a reason for what we're doing. We have to have a reasonable assignment for justification. And in attempting to think of the reason, we improve our approach towards pure reason. and we increase our abstract intuitive capacity. With Vulcan, we've had other references, and we discussed Jehovah as identified with Saturn and Vulcan, and its relation to the symbol of the Soviet Union. It's a very material combination, and has a lot of first ray in it. Vulcan is within the orbit of Mercury. Some people have been, I think, misled by that. Let's just say it's easy to be misled, and thinking that this is literally so, and that somehow, well, let me take that back. Vulcan is within the orbit of Mercury, but is it so close to Mercury always that you know, have to know the Mercury position to know the Vulcan position? So it's easy to be misled by thinking that Vulcan always has to be within 3 degrees of Mercury. Maybe not. My friend David Walters, the Vulcan expert, as far as I know, seems to have proven that it is not necessary or even possible. But yes, within the orbit of Mercury, and maybe another intra-mercurial planet exists as well. We've talked about the law of sacrifice and death, and it being Vulcan and Neptune in opposition. I elaborated on that. By the time we get here to the end, you know, we've covered quite a few of these. No sense to go over it in another way. We just know that Vulcan builds form and Neptune dissolves form and contributes to disintegration. Well, it's certainly a sacrificial planet. It gives up its ring pass knot. That's how Neptune sacrifices. Neptune finds itself so much in the other that it sacrifices what is found within its conventional ring pass knot. When you think, you know, here's your body, the skin encapsulated lower ego, and you say, well, this is what I am, and here's what I am. But when your sense of identity goes way beyond your ring pass knot, you more willingly sacrifice what you had previously identified with, because you're just as much there as you are here. That's the great Neptunian gift. So there always has to be pralaya. You know, Vulcan builds and Neptune, and Neptune destroys through pralaya. In Vulcan, the sons of mine have nearly completed their work. Well, how does this fit with the 2/5 transmutation? Now, who do we mean by the sons of mine? Do we mean the solar angels, or do we mean the human beings? Maybe we should go to page 742 and look for the context. It's so important, I think, to find the context. Let's do this. No, that's not right. Let's do this. Vulcan, sons, mind. No? This, well, let's see, what page is it? 742. 742. Okay. Their work, in every scheme, we have attempted to carry the thought of the student beyond his own tiny sphere and to consider the Manasa Devas, okay, in the solar system. In every scheme, they have their place, but in some, as in the Jupiter scheme, they are just beginning their work, and as in others, as in the Vulcan and Venus scheme, they are nearly completed. Venus is in her last round and has nearly developed her fourth kingdom to perfection, or as much as is possible in the system. In the Earth scheme, They are in full tide of work. And what about the Vulcan scheme? And they will demonstrate the height of their activity in the next round. They pass cyclically through the schemes and under law, the law of karma of the planet, for the planetary logos. It looks like we're not going to link this to the 1/5. Well, it's not an exact transposition. It's note-taking. Their work is nearly completed. See, we say here, in Vulcan, the sons of Mayan have nearly completed their work. There's a quotation there. But that's not really the quotation. In a matter of fact, we don't even have the word sons of Mayan, do we? Unless further down here we do have it. We don't. So we have here, they, the Manasseh Devas, are just beginning their work. So in a way, we have to say that, okay, let's put that back. We have to say that this is not an accurate quotation. This gives the idea, but is not an accurate quotation. So because, you know, the Manasseh Devas are the solar angels, but if Vulcan has only transmuted 2/5 of its humanity, then the work is not really completed. So we'd have to see what Venus, what Master DK really means. Their work in another's, as in Vulcan and Venus schemes, their work is nearly completed. Venus is in her last round. This is not the case, probably, for Vulcan yet, inasmuch as the 2/5 are there. 3/5 remaining, I would say, to be transmuted. So that is a problem, an apparent contradiction. But let's go on to, DK is collecting certain great themes here. He goes on to Capricorn. The Dianes were connected with the crocodile and their abode in Capricornus. We wonder even whether there's been a direct extraction of exact quotes from the secret doctrine, or whether they've been somewhat noted or somewhat essentialized. The Dianes were connected with the crocodile and their abode in Capricornus. Well, this is about the 5th creative hierarchy, ruled by Capricorn. So it is the lower part of this dual hierarchy is especially related to the crocodile. The higher part, I would say, to the dragon of wisdom. or to the angel. There's the crocodile and there's the angel. And the dragon of wisdom is a serpent of light. Dragon of wisdom. Okay. Dragon of wisdom is a serpent of light. So we keep the serpent terminology, but we contrast this type of fiery serpent or reptile with all that is low, representing the represented by the crocodile. Now, some people think that the crocodile is just fine, but remember, let's go to Egypt. Going to Egypt, you were always tested by crocodiles and the mysteries. They could eat you up, you know. The crocodile represents the personality which devours the heart, life of the deceased if he has not balanced his karma. So, I don't know, we can say with Blavatsky that the crocodile is the first to see the sun in the Nile and can have, therefore, a good reputation, but as a sun worshiper. But I keep on thinking about the Osirian mysteries and the way the heart of Osiris can be, who is man, the candidate, Hercules, can be devoured and sent back into incarnation unless there has been a true, unless the heart is as light as a feather, which means there would be no sin left to expiate. So it's a dual hierarchy. And the Dianes may be connected with the crocodile, yes, and their abode in Capricornus, and probably Capricorn does actually rule, in some sense, the crocodile. But it also rules the higher part of this hierarchy. And I wonder about this, whether we do not have a Venus-Mars polarity. With Venus hierarchically ruling Capricorn, representing its angelic part, and Mars exalted in Capricorn. DK says it's a lot of war, really, representing the personality. So does Mars figure here in the crocodile, which devours, just as the personality, which is Mars, devours the soul. At the outset of each incarnation, can that be what happens? Capricorn is the 10th sign of the zodiac and has in it 28 stars. I've often looked at that. Does it? And you know, we have such more sophisticated means of observation now. Would it still be 28? I like the idea. 28 is the Om, and also the 1, the 10. So it fits numerologically. And in a way, it has to be the sign connected with the peak of humanity. Let's see, the there's a zodiac, we have a zodiac of 10 and of 12. And maybe the zodiac of 10 is connected with Capricorn as the climax, and the zodiac of 12 with Pisces. And this latter number is far more Davic, angelic. Well, how do you get a 12 out of a 10 is take the last term of the 10 and make it a 3. And you can make every one a 3. I think that is possible. There is a mystic connection between the names Makara and Kumara. Well, let's just say one thing that stands out. Makara the crocodiles, Kumara the holy youths. There are Aras in both, and an M, and another A, three A's in one, and a K. So the U is substituted. There is the U is, or just this number, U, and I don't want universe, I want just you, is substituted for the A in Kumara. And, you know, from the realm of thought, when you think about the thought involved here, the Makara, or the, members of the fifth creative hierarchy are on their way to becoming the Kumara. How is this? Because groups of solar angels combine to become planetary logoi, which the Kumara are. Maybe having a role as a intra-planetary Kumara prepares one to be a true planetary Kumara. The Buddhas of activity are representatives of the true planetary Kumaras, or ray lords, in our system. So we have the three Buddhas of activity, and each one of them, let's say, what do they represent, you know? Do they represent like Mars, Venus, not Venus maybe, Mars, Mercury, Vulcan, perhaps, sticking close to the sun here, not going too far out to the really elder brother planets? Is that what they do? And I offer that as a possibility. Do the Buddhas of activity represent the planetary Kumara? Okay, I want to keep it capital. Planetary Kumaras, or ray lords, such as Mars, Mercury, Vulcan. We'd have everything together, you know, these intra-Jupiterian planets are the ones that come, before the asteroid belt, all have quite a fate with each other. Mars, Mercury, Vulcan, Earth, Venus. Sometimes it is said that Sanat Kumara carries a certain Venusian ray. He's the Lord of Venusian love, but he's yet an emanation of our planetary logos. And we don't hear our planetary logos being called the Lord of Venusian love, but we hear Sanat Kumara, that emanation of our planetary logos, being called that. Well, really, a whole septenate of Kumaras of an intra-planetary type must exist. Because what we have, you know, we have three Buddhas of activity. And we have three esoteric Buddhas. So again, it's the six around the one, we have the seven. So every one of them has to be, in a way, a planetary representative, but maybe the higher or the esoteric Buddhas represent presently higher planets which are not as active in orchestrating events on within our planetary scheme. So I like Vulcan, Mars, and Mercury. Vulcan and Mercury very close. And, you know, one could even say, well, is there a representative of Venus somewhere here, because Sanat Kumara simply represents the Earth? And then we'd have to put some of the higher Buddhas of activity as esoteric Kumaras up in this area. Jupiter would probably have to be one, Saturn another. We probably have to leave the abstracted planets Uranus and Neptune out of the picture. I don't think Pluto would be too good. So we'd have enough if we stick within the bounds of Saturn. But that there are seven Kumaras, three of them esoteric Buddhas, is pretty clear, and hence the number 14 when you count the Raylords, you know, because the Kumaras are not Raylords. They are, in a way, I don't know, are they something more or are they something less? It looks like there's something more. The Raylords are seven spirits, but the Kumaras are something greater, and they each are a representative of a planet. The Raylords, too, may represent a planet, but especially a ray. We have to deal with the derivation of the 14. So, Makara and Kumara, well, there's a connection with the Pentagon, the 5, and also the downward pointing, five-pointed star, and the upward pointing five-pointed star. When you invert Venus, you get Mars. Well, if Venus is the circle above the cross, one of the symbols for Mars has been the cross above the circle. So if you invert the five-pointed star, maybe you get a more aggressive, elemental, ferocious attack of Mars. The crocodile, in fact. So this has something to do with the duality of this hierarchy. I know it's all ruled by Venus in a way, but one of them is an inverted Venus. And an inverted Venus, an inverted pentagram, is Mars. Because the attitude of the members of the Black Lodge is very separative, and so is Mars at first until it turns towards aspiration. A Capricorn represents fivefold man and therefore the five Kumaras. So five Kumaras are the five planetary logoi of Brahma, the higher planets are not included. So first we're dealing with the five, and then later with the two more. Capricorn is related to the ocean god, interestingly, who is that? Neptune, as the, quote, one who, well, let's just keep it, who crosses the water. And it personifies solar fire, Capricorn, at least in its connection with the higher part of the fifth grade of hierarchy, at least in its connection with the higher part of the fifth grade of hierarchy. So, you know, we have transfiguration, the exaltation of Venus, or not exaltation, but the elevation of Venus, the elevation of Venus, the ruler of the Capricornian fifth creative hierarchy on the mountain top. Yep. So it says what? Capricornus typifies solar fire? Or there's a mystic connection between Makara and Kumara. They're polarities in a way. The five Kumaras are Brahmic Kumaras, related to the ocean god. Capricorn is involved here. And the Kumaras, if they are Venusian, I want to say they're Neptunian. If the Kumaras are Venusian, they are also related to Neptune. And you think about hierarchy number five, and its relation to Neptune, and the fact that, in a way, it's a sponsor of hierarchy number 10. You know what I'm talking about, I think, you know, after all this time, if you've made it that far. Well, here's hierarchy number 5, and it's ruled, veiling the Christ, it's ruled by Neptune, I suppose. It's the fifth creative hierarchy, and then we go on to the next hierarchy, number 10, ruled by Venus. And the fifth hierarchy of the almost liberated kind is much higher than this fifth hierarchy of the still manifested kind. But yet there is a strong connection, just as there is between Venus and Neptune. So, the higher part of the Kumara personifies solar fire, yes. And the Makara, it has to be the higher part of the Makara, not the lower, because the lower Makara personifies fire by friction and the mental elementals. Well, there are many mysteries here, and DK says we're not going to fathom the story of the solar angels completely. No, we're not. But we can put out those, what have I tried to call them all this time? I've called them, you know, putting out tendrils of invocation. Maybe, and they are energetic. They are energetic or energic tendrils, which call upon the intuition. That's what we want to be able to do. Capricorn is connected with the birth of the spiritual microcosm and with the death of the physical universe. Well, Christ is born. Christ is born, and the Christ in every one of us is the spiritual microcosm. And through initiation, the spiritual microcosm comes to maturity. Through initiation, under Capricorn, the spiritual microcosm comes to maturity. And the death of the physical universe, well, how? Capricorn rules crystallization, and hence destruction. Spirit will always destroy the crystallized form. So we'll have to be on the lookout when it comes time for our physical universe to be destroyed, even our solar system, the power of Capricorn. Meanwhile, we're using it according to the law of elevation, the fifth law of the soul, sometimes called, the law of elevation at least is the law of group progress, but the law of elevation is the esoteric name of this. So the spiritual microcosm comes to birth at the first initiation. It's the, what should we call it, second birth. But the babe in Christ has to grow to maturity. Okay. When the sun passes away behind the 30th degree of Capricorn and will reach no more the sign Pisces, then the night of Brahma has come. Well, that's, you know, how to deal with this, but Capricorn, as we have just learned, is responsible for the destruction of the physical universe. Well, that universe has to be shattered, and it also has to dissolve. The 30th degree of Capricorn seems to be the entry point for the sun. And if it Is it going forward towards Pisces, or is it going in a clockwise manner away from Pisces and into Capricorn? The sun passes away. See, it's almost as if Capricorn is the end. Let's just say, from one perspective, Capricorn is the end. And will we be talking of a counterclockwise revolution? Right now it's clockwise, isn't it? When the sun passes the 30th degree of Capricorn, it's going to go to the 29th, and so forth and so forth. And maybe it's going to end in Aries in some way, but it looks like a very, very long time. What this seems to suggest to me is Capricorn is the end. And there's no, and the last two signs are not considered anymore. So destruction enters. Of course, it's hard to separate Pisces from Pralaya. And the night of Brahma for whom? You see, because, let's just say, there are, it's hard to keep red going. I'll put it down here. There are parts of our universe which have never heard, I'll make it big, never heard of H-E-R-D, E-A-R-D, of Capricorn. So there is a night of Brahma, a night of Brahma for our solar system. But it is a very localized night. The night of Brahma, it just has to do with the duration of our solar system. But from what perspective? From what perspective do we see this? Do we see this passage? What perspective? Because the 30th degree of Capricorn may mean one thing to an earthling and another to a Saturnian or Jupiterian. It won't be the 30th degree of Capricorn unless we are talking about the relationship of the sun to the starry systems. When the sun passes away behind the 30th degree of Capricorn, see, is it the sun from our perspective? Then we cannot say from our perspective that it would be the same on the other planets. So why should our local universe end when the 30th degree of Capricorn is somehow entered as from the perspective of our planet? But I've sometimes said, look, what if there's a vernal equinox on the sun itself or in the solar atom? And what if there is a line which is according to the rotation of the solar atom, which is in what direction? It lines up with various stars. And what happens when the solar, with the sun, let's just say, perhaps with the solar atom, lines up with the 30th degree of Capricorn, and is it going counterclockwise? Maybe. So whether things are coming or going left, going right, counterclockwise, clockwise, all that has yet to be straightened out with respect to our solar system. I think we could find the direction of rotation of our sun on a 27-day period. But what about that 100,000-year period? Well, whatever the direction of rotation may be, it looks like Capricorn is the end, and when it reaches 30th degrees of Capricorn, Pisces will no more be reached. That's the end of our local universe. So there's so much that is hidden and implied here. And we have to think carefully. Now let's see, let's just take a look if we can see something called rotation of the sun. So on Google, you know, thank goodness for Google, answers everything, doesn't it? Rotation of the sun, which direction? Let's see. Sun's rotation, it rotates in the counterclockwise direction when viewed from the north. The same direction the planets rotate and orbit around the sun. Well, counterclockwise. So, yeah, that's interesting. This is important. Let's see if we can... the sun rotates around an axis and roughly perpendicular to the plane of the ecliptic. The sun's rotational axis is 7.25 degrees. From the perpendicular to the ecliptic, it rotates in a counterclockwise direction when viewed from the north, the same direction that the planets rotate and orbit around the sun. Well, what's interesting here, let's put that in, you know. Solar rotation. Okay. Now, our ages, our ages on Earth, precessional ages, are determined by a clockwise gyration of the axis, our polar axis. One wonders, however, whether that is necessary in the case of the sun. If we have a counterclockwise rotation of the solar atom, that's what we would need. Okay, so we know, let's do this. We know that there is a counterclockwise rotation of the sun, just like the rotations of the planets and like their revolutions. But what is the direction of rotation of the solar atom? Let's just say that there must be perhaps some point on the Earth, on the sun, or some axis on the sun which aligns with the stars. So the 30th degree of Capricorn will mean one thing to a viewer on the Earth and another to a viewer on the sun. And we have to say, is the age in which the entire solar system finds itself related to any gyration of its axis or to the alignments caused by the rotation of the solar atom? Well, we'll have to leave this to the hierarchical astrologers in the great department of astrology and hierarchy. I think that would be the thing to do. We just have maybe a little more. Do we dare? Yeah, pretty much. We can try it. The mystery of Capricorn is hidden in these five: spiritual man, aspirant, disciple, initiate, adept. And in the biblical words, the sheep and the goats. Well, spiritual man seems lower lower than the aspirant, which is lower than the disciple and the initiate and the adept, of course. So, Capricorn gives the initiatory incentive to all of them. Okay, but I'll just... Capricorn is responsible for giving the initiatory incentive to each of these categories. You know, it's hard with Capricorn to know whether it rules the first five initiations, which it does, or the five higher initiations, which are sometimes called major, 3 through 7. We certainly can find a place for Capricorn in every one of the, of the lesser initiations. I mean, the birth of the Christ in the heart, at the time of Christmas, the crossing of the water, second initiation, the glory on the mountaintop, the third initiation. Well, maybe less, a little less prominent for the fourth and fifth, but the depths of aloneness, having to rely entirely upon one's own resources at the fourth, and then perhaps the fifth, the secret of the true ego or the secret of the true soul, or finally coming into supernal light. Light supernal begins at the third degree, but what can that supernal light be, light be like when compared to the initiation of revelation? So we went over the relationship of Capricorn to the first five initiations. And the fifth suggests entry into a fullness of supernal light conveyed through the initiation of the revelation. Yeah, and of course the hardness of life and the way that the fourth kingdom and the, well, let's just put it like this, becoming the true diamond soul at the fourth initiation. We can relate, we can find ways of relating these, definitely. But maybe if we went on to the sixth and seventh, well, not so easily. I think I'm inclined to think of Capricorn then as the ruler of the major initiations. If we consider the first initiation major and the lesser initiations, which are not the great monastic initiations, before the birth of the Christ, as the minor initiations. Yeah, I think there's not so much Chohan Shell. I mean, we could find relations, of course, but when you come to resurrection, it's got to be Aries. And Aries is taking over in the initiatory role eventually by the time we reach the seventh root race. It's taking over as the source of the initiatory energy. So maybe Capricorn doesn't fit so well at the seventh initiation, though of course the seventh ray is there. That initiation, however, is more ruled by the second ray. Well, let's just take a look quickly. If we go to the book The Rays of Initiation and we go to page 340, we'll have the different rays, and by the time we get to the seventh initiation, it is the second ray, isn't it? Head center, the second ray. Then when we go on further to very esoteric initiations, we have the four minor rays and the three major rays. Things are combined in groups. Won't it be interesting to discuss this if we get to that point? Okay, and then here is the last thing on Capricorn, and after that I think we can pause. Once in the history of each scheme, an avatar from the constellation of Capricorn appears on mental levels. Each scheme, not just ours. This level is the lowest one on which these interplanetary deities appear. Interplanetary deities, they are part of the solar systemic structure, but they do not belong to a particular planet, No more can be communicated on this matter. The mystery of the goat lies hidden here, which is the name of this avatar. Lies hidden here, the mystery of the goat. This avatar makes his appearance in the third round of the third chain and disappears in the fifth round of the fourth chain. Well, this is interesting because his disappearance, we may say, the disappearance may be at the time of the judgment day. But the fifth round of the fourth chain. Okay, yes, we have the fourth chain and we will have a fifth chain round. His appearance in the third round of the third chain. Maybe he tried to do something in relation to the moon chain. He must be very much with us. This is why the constellation Capricorn is often isolated in importance from the rest of the constellations. Capricorn then is very much connected with the Earth scheme and maybe has been here since a time on the moon chain. Since a time on the moon chain, he has been here. Now, I think this may be before the moon chain fell to pieces. There is somewhere an indication of when the moon chain collapsed. We might say moon chain round, and there are 10. Let's see if we can get anything. As stated in various cult books, many present the advanced humanity individualized on the moon chain and only took physical bodies in the earth chain, escaping incarnation in the first three rounds of the earth chain. And the first two races of the fourth round, there wouldn't have been much in those races to attract them. No mentality. The lords of the dark face, or the inherent forces of matter, for a time achieve success, and only in the fifth round of our chain will see their ultimate defeat. So that's the judgment day, I think. The fifth round of our chain. That's so important, you know. To get the bigger picture, Cosmic Fire 393, Now, So I'm interested in when the destruction took place. In the chart are given two chains that are apparently lacking, the moon chain and the Uranus chain. The reasons are abstruse, but something may be hinted at. The moon chain with the earth chain form two units or two polarities. The point of merging was reached and the earth chain absorbed and synthesized the moon chain in the same sense as certain schemes will merge and only three will apparently be left. Oh, he hints wonderfully. Therefore, the earth chain is essentially dual in nature, being the sum total of the male and female chain. This is exactly as I had remembered it and was hinting at earlier. I'm sorry that I couldn't have been more definitive about this. But apparently, you know, we're on a dual chain right now because we have absorbed much. We have absorbed the life of the moon chain. And have we absorbed that being who is the lord of the moon chain as well? I'm not sure. This is 414. TCF 414. Oh, my. In due course, another merging in the scheme will eventuate, and then Uranus chain will flash into objectivity. Okay, this is the whole thing about the 7, the 3, and the 10, or the 10, the 7, and the 3. Very important, and I think I was careful here in my discussion of it, but I'd have to refresh myself. And we're not going into that so fully. In this chain, individualization took place in the third root race and in the fourth round. In which chain? Which chain? Let's see. During the third root race, animal individualization took place in the third root race, fourth round. That's ours. Speaking in this connection of a round through a chain of globes and not of the life force of the planetary logos circulating through seven chains in a scheme. Wow. Here it is. Well, probably I have that reference and was overjoyed in reaching it at that time. But I'm overjoyed again. Page 459. Treatise on Cosmic Fire 459. And now I will say that scheme rounds do indeed exist. So happy about that. That shows us the scheme round. Sometimes you have an intuition about things and you forget whether you believe it is so because of inference or because you've actually read it someplace. On our moon chain, here it is. On the moon chain, individualization took place during the fifth race of the third round. That's something. And in the next chain to ours, the evolutionary arc, will take place in the sixth race. So, well, the fifth race of the third round. Well, what did that avatar do? When did it come? So, let me go back here to get the astrology. Yes. Very important. And on the moon chain, individualization took place. Cosmic Fire 459. 459. Okay, is there anything else? No. No. At this time, no. Individualization upon the moon chain took place in the fifth race of the third round. Now let's compare that with when the avatar showed up. This is EP2, page 209. EP2 and 209. Now, going back, when did the avatar show up? The third round of the third chain. That's when he showed up. And individualization? No. Individualization took place when? Let's see. One, two. Individualization took place in the third round, in the fifth race of the third round, but maybe on the third chain. Took place the third round of the third chain, yes. And perhaps we'd have to look at, we don't know what globe, maybe it's the moon. Maybe the moon globe was involved. It was the third chain. Chain. And the third round. So the fifth race of the third round, but the fifth race in what, in the third chain, and on what globe? Maybe the moon. So maybe what we have here, putting this together, maybe we have individualization occurring on the moon under the avatar from Capricorn in the third round third chain fourth globe, the moon, our moon, fourth globe. And fifth race, or fifth root race, as there were probably root races. Well, maybe this is a little bit of sleuthing, and maybe we have tracked it down. So that avatar from Capricorn that showed up in the third chain, third round, and in relation to the third chain, was, I think, you know, responsible for individualization. Capricorn, in relation to individualization and for, well, not the coming of the Lords of the Flame, because they didn't use that method, but some, maybe, Venusian vibration. Third round of the third chain. He made his appearance, and individualization occurred in the third round, fifth race, on the moon, probably, and perhaps in that third chain. Okay. So the third, maybe moon globe was the third chain, so what do we have here? The third round of the third chain, which was the, and let's put it in here, as it was, the moon chain, fourth globe, perhaps the moon, because that's where the development had to take place and individualization had to occur physically, I suppose, and in the fifth root race. It's a very, very monastic combination, isn't it? Very monastic combination. So then how long was it before destruction came? When did destruction come? I'm not sure that this is given. Destruction, well, I don't think so. Let's see. Moonchain. Moonchain round. Destruction. One. This will be the judgment day in the fifth round on our fourth chain. So I think the question is now answered, and our judgment day, maybe there are higher forms, will take place in the fifth chain round, in the fifth chain round, in our chain, the fourth. And that's how long the avatar will stay. Now, you kind of wonder, it really makes me wonder when the real destruction took place. How far did the moon chain get? There was an arresting of the... could it have been arrested? Could... like this. Could there have been an arresting of development in the fifth round of the moon on the moon chain? Because there's a cleavage with the number five. And maybe thus far shall you go and no further, a mini judgment day, which resulted in the transference, because always with a judgment day, there is a transference. In this case, into a pralaya, awaiting the work of the fourth chain, fourth creative hierarchy, a fourth chain to progress far enough. for re-entry. Now, probably many seeds of life on the moon chain could effect a re-entry before humanity could, to lay the basis, as it were. Probably the lunar lords, who were to be the vehicles of the lower kingdom, entities in the lower kingdoms had to enter before that, before humanity did, in the fourth round, fourth root race, third subrace on our planet. Well, okay, this has taken us, someplace. And I just find, you know, that in a way I feel clearer about some of these things than maybe I did even before I started talking about them. I've puzzled over many of these things before. I hope they stay in my mind. At least they are written down and they are recorded. The avatar of Capricorn, individualization on the moon chain, he's involved in that. He's involved in the judgment day when our planet is more oriented towards Venus and many are shunted off towards Mars. The judgment day is a Venus-Mars divide, really, in respect to our Earth. And in a way, the Makara is a Venus-Mars divide. Even though we don't put Mars there, the Mars rules all the lunar lords, and the personality is a lunar lord, so part of Mars could be connected with the lower part of that fifth creative hierarchy. All right, well, I'm way over. Maybe I'm losing my discipline now as we're getting near the end of the book, but this is the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 158D. We're on page 677. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 159A, page 677. Okay, friends. Well, we have about, you know, less than 20 pages to go so far. But just this drop in the bucket and a water bug walking on the ocean and a water bug supported by surface tension in the ocean of theosophy. Well, we have a ways to go, but we have to take every step, and in some sense, you know, I know it's my bias, but it helps to be, if I can say a crazy word, meticulously entiritous. It helps to be meticulously entiritous so you don't miss any connections, we might say. I'll say that crazy thing. It helps to be meticulously entiritous. And I know there is no such word, but I'm going to make it as if there were one, then fewer connections will be missed, and pure reason will come all the sooner. All right. Let's let it go with that, and we'll be back later, either tonight. I guess I've done 8 of these now today. Back later, either tonight or tomorrow. Getting close now. Then it'll be time to breathe and then to start another book, or maybe to start the Egoic Lotus book, to think of how to organize that. Maybe to go through the various references first. I have a collection of references for the Egoic Lotus, and if they are established in our minds, it'll be easier to put the implications together. So, see you later. Bye-bye.